Well, today we conclude our study of Samuel and David's reign. But today we're talking about being disciplined. And does God use discipline in our lives to cause us to suffer? Or does he use it to make us recognize the choices that we've made that we shouldn't have done?
All of the above.
Because if I... to change somebody's behavior or to change their motivation about a behavior, if I mention these words, weight, drug use, impatience, and gossiping.
The third
one, what do people do, or what do we do in our lives to try to change these things?
Help them or fail.
If you're like me, you probably need to not eat quite as much and maybe exercise a little bit. But don't.
But you're hard to find the more you want to eat. That's where I am. That's fine. And the harder I try, the more I want to eat.
I'm
going to
do better today, and then tomorrow I'm going to do better tomorrow.
No. Are we impatient?
Yes.
How do we change that? Do we
try to learn patience?
Try to learn patience.
No, we just stay impatient.
That we want things when we want it, but not when we need it.
I know you looked at me out here.
And I will just throw out gossiping. Do we gossip? No.
Yes.
Nobody does that.
Sometimes we change that. We feel like that we're learning about
sharing.
Sharing our constructive criticism when we're telling you what's wrong with somebody else.
That's what it is.
Yeah. And it doesn't apply to me.
That's right. Never does.
So we do have an attorney
But one writer or one person about the book of Samuel and David's, they said if they had had their choice, they would have stopped David's story in chapter 23. It's not part of our lesson, but it goes on. I mean, they'll just read some things. It talks about the Lord spoke through me, and his word was on his tongue. The God of Israel spoke, and the Rock of Israel said to me, when one rules over men in righteousness, when he rules in the fear of God, he is the light of morning at sunrise on a cloudless morning, like the brightness after rain that brings the grass from the earth. Is not my house right with God? Has he not made with me an everlasting covenant, arranged and secured in every part? Will he not bring to fruition my salvation and grant me my every desire? But evil men are all to be cast aside like thorns, which are not gathered with the hand. Whoever touches thorns uses a tool of iron or the shaft of a spear. They are burned up where they lie. But we didn't stop right there. Today we're seeing, not say another part of David, but it's like in our lifetimes, the government does do a census. And why do they do a census?
When they can help the people, you know, in the state or the city.
Mm-hmm.
And just basically to see the growth of the nation, our growth for us, if we're, you know, in we all know that probably the strongest numbers in right now are single adults. Mm-hmm. For us, our age. Yeah, people, you know, and they look at that.
Are we sometimes hesitant to answer their questions?
Because we feel like we're trying to get in our business.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like some of them are a little bit too personal.
Mm-hmm.
How much money do you get? And this and that. How many brothers and sisters are in your household?
But like you said, the government does use that sometimes to help certain states, cities, administering federal funds or grants, whatever. And into the political side, the number of people you have, the number of representatives you can have, so forth and so on. But David wanted to do a census. And basically, this person named Gad, it starts out in verse 10, it says, he had taken the census, but then his conscience troubled him. And he says to the Lord, I have sinned greatly in what I've done. Now, Lord, because I've been very foolish, please take away your servant's guilt. Well, the Lord listened to David, and he did react to him. And if you were David, and you had asked for forgiveness, and the Lord came back to you and said, it's in verse 13, he spoke to Gad, he said, Gad went to David and said to him, shall there come upon you 3 years of famine in your land, or 3 months of fleeing from your enemies while they pursue you, or 3 days of plague in your land? He says, now then, think it over and decide how I should answer the one who sent me. What would you have done? All three choices are not very good. But so did David. I kind of got mixed readings or whatnot. Did David decide, or did David inform Gad to go back and tell God, you choose?
If he chose one of those, he'd have been in the hands of another group of people trying to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt like if he chose the plague, that the Lord, he would be dealing with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Not the people. But still 70,000 people died.
Yeah. Because verse 14 said, he says, I am in deep distress. Let us fall into the hands of the Lord, for his mercy is great, but do not let me fall into the hands of men. You know, I'm not going to make a choice and then be taken advantage of or come upon me. So the plague came, and like Ms. Wilson said, there was death, attrition. It says in the reading, it said when they did the census, quote, mainly they were just counting the number of men, not everybody. And this writer brings out that there were, quote, approximately 1.3 million men, but 70,000 died. Now, this is where I'll show my ignorance. When you had the feeding the thousands, when God only had, we only had two fish and two loaves of bread. My understanding was we fed 4,000 people. But this writer brings out it was just 4,000 men. And I never caught that. Because in the scripture it does say 4,000, but it does mention, not count, or sort of mention women and children.
Well, back then they didn't count women and children. Women were not, you know.
No. So did God then show mercy upon David and his decision? It goes on to say, in verse 17, it says, when David saw the angel who was striking down the people, he said to the Lord, I am the one who has sinned and done wrong. These are but sheep. What have they done? Let your hand fall upon me and my family. Now, if we go back in David's life, has David's life always been without any episode?
His life would be considered colorful.
Colorful?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of drama.
He did. A lot of drama.
Had he suffered in the past from any of his actions? I mean, we know the story of David and Bathsheba, Bathsheba's husband Uriah, but what happened after that? David lost a son. So, yeah, I mean, could we say, or could we look at this, I mean, was David this great person that is professed to be? Or is it a study of David's life that lets us know we have imperfections, we do things wrong, God never loses sight of us, but we can learn from him how to change our ways and counteract some of our actions?
I think one of the things he proved, though, is that he did, I guess, through all of his life, he finally learned to listen. Because the three choices, and then he went to God and asked him what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, show me what to do. And in verse 15 it says, so the Lord sent. The Lord sent it. So he did take care of it. But, you know, I mean, David didn't go back. You know, like Moses kind of went back and forth with the Lord. You know, they sort of talked about things, you know, like why this and that. But David accepted what the Lord did when he sent the plague. David, he never really questioned, you know, why did you take the plague? Why didn't we do this? Why didn't you do that? And it's just, you know, not point blank. He sent the plague, and then David had to deal with the repercussions from the Lord sending the plague. But we all know that what the Lord did was right.
Mm-hmm. Because another person said that opinions vary as to the particular sin that David commits. One person says maybe it's because he failed to collect the proper offerings which God commands from us. It could have been that David was trying to boost his confidence by gaining the great military strength. I mean, if we think about certain leaders in foreign countries, they think they're so powerful because they've got all the numbers of men in their armies. But what this person kind of brings out a question: did David pridefully want to magnify his achievements rather than glorifying and trusting God? Do we get caught up sometimes in life that we've talked before, you know, I've got it made. And I'm patting myself on the back instead of giving thanks to the one who provided that for me, who gives me the knowledge and the strength to understand, quote, how to live my life, how to treat people, what I should do with my excess that I have. I'm to share it.
But don't it show in here? I think it shows in here too, like every day when we have a decision to make, like change a job or move or something, everybody's going to have an opinion about it. We need to move, or we need to change jobs, or at our age in life, we need to do this, or you need to do that. And it's for people that are not Christians or not true believers, it's hard for them to, when you stand up and say, I'm going to stay at my same job or at my same house, or this, I've prayed about it, we've prayed about it, and this is where the Lord wants me to be right now in my life, at this job, at this house, and this. And everybody's not going to understand, well, if you'd have taken the job this, or if you'd have moved this or that. So this is kind of like David. He, you know, the people, who was he going to please? With those three choices, who do you please? I mean,
nobody.
Exactly. I mean,
not really.
And look at the people of the three choices that were going to all be hurt. Because if David took the one about running from his enemies, was he going to take his entourage with him? So they would be running too.
No.
So, I mean, it's kind of like in everyday life. We make decisions and other people might not understand why we do it.
But Gad tells David, starts on verse 18, it says, on that day, Gad went to David and said to him, go up and build an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor of Arur the Jebusite. And it says, so David went up as the Lord had commanded through Gad. And when Arur looked and saw the king and his men coming toward him, he went out and bowed down before him, before the king, with his face to the ground, and asked, why has my lord the king come to this servant? I'll just continue on it. David tells him, I'm here to buy your threshing floor, so I can build an altar to the Lord, so that the plague on the people may be stopped. And Arunah just said to David, he said, let my lord the king take whatever pleases him and offer it up. Here's an oxen for the burnt offering. Here are the threshing sledges and ox yokes for the wood. O king, Arunah gives all this to the king. May the Lord your God accept you. David wanted to pay, but Arunah would not take that. Now, I thought this was kind of interesting too, and I mean, these are things that you learn even in my quote older age. He didn't purchase it, but it was on Mount Moriah. Now, what significance does Mount Moriah have to all this? That's where Abraham went with Isaac to the Lord. It would be where David's son Solomon would eventually, he built the temple of God there. But it's also on the same set of hills, this writer points out, where Jesus died on the cross. So all of this took place in a certain part of the country there. It says David would personally pay for his sin on the very piece of property where one day Jesus would pay for our sins. We're promised what? We're promised heaven. Will people argue against that with you? Is there really a heaven that you talk about? The scientists and people who have studied the universe, they don't know how far the universe really goes. And what are we told about heaven?
We
It's just
the streets of gold, and
it's a place there that we can live. A mansion.
Mm-hmm.
I would go for real Bonnie too, and we talked about heaven, and he said, the pastor said, we all read about the streets of gold and, you know, what it's going to look like, all the jewels and all that kind of stuff. He said, but what I'm more intrigued about and this I'm looking forward to is that when you get to heaven, there'll be no more sorrow.
There'll be no more pain.
There'll be no more tears. He said, you know, the place is one thing, but knowing what we've suffered here on earth with pain and tears and sickness and stuff, just to know that where you're going, it'll never be like that again. And you never really think about
just the peace from now on.
So it doesn't matter that the streets are gold. What's going to matter is us, how we, you know, how we perceive and how we're going to be treated there, or how our life will be different there because we won't deal with all that stuff anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, people that don't have that kind of peace, they'll never know what they're missing or what they're going to miss, but just to know that you will never have to suffer again.
Right.
That was what Jesus said. He suffered like to go on the cross, and he ascended into heaven. That was all behind him. It was a peace for him too.
Because Scripture says David bought the threshing floor and the oxen and paid 50 shekels of silver for them. He built an altar to the Lord, sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings. It says, then the Lord answered prayer in behalf of the land, and the plague on Israel was stopped. Do we often show compassion to people that are struggling? I mean, it could be a close friend, family member, church member, but say a person who's struggling with alcohol. They're an alcoholic. Do we try to help them and they don't do what we want them to do? So do we push them away? Do we quit having any sort of compassion for them?
I think that's where our impatience comes in. Like you said, I've done fine enough, now I'm tired, I've had enough of it, you're not going. And so the human aspect of you get impatient because somebody doesn't do what you feel like is best for them to do right then.
Mm-hmm.
You can lead a horse to the water, but you can't pass by.
Do we have compassion for our community? I mean, I'm just as guilty as anybody. You know, everybody, you know, this gunshot went off here, and this went here, and this, and I saw this happen. But to me, I mean, I'm just talking out. What if instead of this focus group, that's all they talk about, if there was another focus group over here that we're praying for you? Now, that might be mentioned sometimes, but then people laugh at you. They'll mock you. They'll scoff at you. But do we just look at the poor little city of Montgomery? But you look at the whole world, whole nation, everywhere. What happens here happens everywhere else.
In Chicago, what happened up there last 2 weekends up in Chicago?
Shooting up here at ASU Friday night, then it was in Jacksonville. So it's not just here, it's everywhere.
Yep.
Jennifer, I guess if we talk about it, people are people. Regardless of where they live, people are all the same. We all have the same, dwelling in us to act like. I mean, to be that way. I mean, there are people that are all over the United States that are sitting in classes like this.
Mm-hmm.
But their city, the city they're in, is having the same issues that we're having. So we're all, it's kind of like they say about the perfect church. If it's going to stay perfect,
you don't need to attend.
Absolutely.
How do we respond to God's compassion? Do we let it be known? Should we let it be known? Mm-hmm. I was caught in this and prayer and working with God, and now I'm here. But sometimes are we ashamed to do that? I don't want to let anyone else know what I've gone through. But if you shared your story with someone, there might be someone else that's experiencing the same thing you're experiencing, and they can learn from you.
Well, it's just like I told that lady that I was helping a while. Her son committed suicide in the living room in the house. I says, I don't know how, I'm not a mother, I don't know how you feel losing a child, but I know how you feel about losing someone through suicide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think some of it, too, is just pride. I don't want people to know that I had a drinking problem, or I took drugs, and yet still I had a drinking problem, but I was here every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pride thing for some to admit that I try. I am a Christian in my heart, but I do drink. So how do you tell somebody that maybe you tried to mentor through church, and then all of a sudden they find out that she's an alcoholic? So how has she been able to teach me this when she's had to live with this? And that's a pride thing. I mean, I think you're embarrassed about because you messed your life up, or I'm ashamed that I had that problem. And, you know, so I think some of that's just human nature. We don't know how to put it out there without being... You know, I mean, and when you live with an alcoholic, you've lived with an alcoholic, how do you explain that to somebody when you left home and everybody thought you were a happy person, but then when you went back home, your home life was different? How do you put that out there without having an embarrassment or a shame attached to you? And I think we do that as Christians. You don't want to admit to somebody that you... This is what I've had to live through this, or that my husband is abusive, but yet still he stands up and teaches a Sunday school class.
I've got a friend in AA, and he says that's one of the biggest things that they talk about there, that it's been real hard. Some of them don't want to admit to anybody else that they're recovering alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want anybody to know it. He said, you're not getting further along in your steps if you don't admit to everybody.
That should be their testimony to the world.
Right.
And he said that so many people just have a hard time with that. And he said, you can't move on until you get past that.
Yeah, that's what we like. So how do you, you know, and I mean, David, he never really, we read the story. Back then they didn't have the pages. But so did the story pass on? Like, did I tell my children about David when David came to my country or my town? Was there, let me tell you about David and the sheep, you know, how did that, so it's the same thing with him, it's the same thing with us. How did he stay in the limelight, I guess, and man, look what all the things, the total life, I guess you could say that. So where are we in that?
Yeah. Here's two statements in the Bible footnotes. It's one is about compassion and one about prayer. It says, God doesn't want his people to suffer. He has both the power and desire to relieve the suffering of his people. He wants to reveal his compassion by making all causes of suffering stop. And his people can testify to many experiences in which God's people turn from sin, intercede with God for the good of the land, and see God stop the cause of suffering. But the last part is God answers to prayer sometimes take very concrete forms. It says, the plague that kills 70,000, it ceased in answer to David's prayer. It says, prayer is not a people-pleasing ritual. It is a conversation in which the believer expects God to respond. So, I mean, we have the tools. But do we use them like we should?
Now, how many folks, first of all, think I've got one on that the plague just stopped? Like, you know, I'm looking at you and you've got a plague, and then I look back and you don't have it anymore. It's like, whoa, how did it just...
Well, who did you look to? You saw David leave.
I was looking to see if they still have the plague, and then all of a sudden they don't. You know, it's kind of like Noah. I mean, the water, it just stopped. It's over.
Like the man who put his hand down in his bosom, you know, and then it's gone.
Or like the manna from heaven, you know, they told him you can only have this, and then they got this, but then in the morning, it's gone. It's just gone.
Because he gave you what you needed.
I just found an interesting fact in my Bible. It says that Samuel was written by Samuel, the prophet Nathan, and Gad.
And Gad.
Yeah. Wow. So, but they put them all together and go.
So it makes you...
actually, they were there when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gad was really a true man of God. Mm-hmm. And
well, God spoke to him to go speak to David.
My Bible
calls
him the seeker.
So it's like, and then we don't hear about him
anymore.
Mm-hmm. He was this kind of there, and then he was...
The child.
Yeah, he was
mm-hmm. Like that man showed up and helped them people, and then he was gone. God being God's angel sent.
That happens to us. People come into our lives for a small amount of time, or just for just... And something is... Yeah, and then go out,
mm-hmm.
and then it starts. It's kind of like I've talked about where you need to read the five people in heaven.
I've told Oliver this. He was in a wreck in Atlanta, and of course he was on blood thinner because he had a heart problem. And he was bleeding profusely, and the paramedics couldn't get it stopped. And they couldn't get him out of the car because the jaws of life hadn't got there. This little bitty skinny gal came in through the back of his van and said something to him and said a prayer and put her hand on his arm and it quit bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And he got her name and everything. She said she was a truck driver. And so the next day after he got out of the hospital, he called the trucking company. She did not work there. They knew nothing about her. Don't tell me they're not angels in their world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Oliver.
Yes, ma'am.
Anybody else got anything? If not, we still have our benediction.
My mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer.